All right, 9:09, making our way through the first day of the long, hot summer after the 4th of July. We thought we'd talk about high-tech stuff. And Andrew Schwartz joins us now, professor of IT in the E.J. Uso College of Business at LSU. He's been researching technology-related issues for over 20 years. And look, y'all, there are no dumb questions here. I want to open the phone line. The professor's going to be with us for an hour. And if you have any questions about high-tech stuff, 504-260-1870, he'll be glad to entertain them. Good morning, Professor. How are you? Did you have a nice 4th?
Fantastic. I did. How about you?
I did. Yeah, it was nice. Very nice. I did have something go on high-tech that I had I tried to do an app for a headshot thing that I needed to do, and I don't know, at some point it worked, at some point it didn't. How friendly are apps, generally speaking? Or let me just go, take a step farther back. If we are all to embrace high tech, what's the mindset to have going into it?
That's a great question. And first, I want to start by, of course, sending hearts and thoughts to the people of Texas that are going through this horrible tragedy. Sure. I was just in Texas over the weekend, and just seeing the devastation in people's eyes, it's pretty sobering to see that. So it was one of those moments where technology kind of breaks down, and it's just person to person. So I think that's kind of interesting as we kind of think about and navigate this high-tech question that you just asked, right, which is, you know, really, what does it look like? And really, if it's interesting, if you look at generational, right? I'm 49 years old. I happen to be the generation that grew up analog, but is now living digitally. And it's been an interesting transition, whereas my kids live digitally. And what I see in my kids' mentality is they have a tech-first mentality. The very first question that they ask is there an app for that? And there's a mentality that's just different when you start to embrace tech from that type of perspective.
Mm-hmm. Is there any way for people that are not of your children's generation or of yours to become more tech-friendly, more tech-savvy?
Absolutely. And I know your listeners are probably going to be tired of me saying this because my answer is always the same, which is just to play. Mm-hmm. You really can't break it. And that's kind of the fun part, right? And you kind of play around and you see the capabilities and you start to really think about how can I use the devices, and I use that multiple, around our lives and use them in a way to make our lives better and a little bit different.
Tell me, when it comes to appliances and these kind of things, is there any way to get anything anymore that's not high tech, that doesn't have all these features built into it?
There is, and there's the backlash, right, against a lot of this. And so it is possible, indeed, to live a tech-free lifestyle, right? You can not go through self-check. You can not have your devices connect to the Internet, of course, all the time as well. But the motivation for that, I guess I would encourage people, is not to be motivated by fear. If you're concerned about privacy or about encroachment upon your digital life, upon your analog life, if those are your concerns, that's justifiable. But if it's for fear, I would encourage everyone just to kind of try things out, because I've just been so impressed lately by the type of consumer electronics that we're seeing, and not just AI, that really have a significant impact of our lives.
Let me open the phone lines here, 504-260-1870, Oakland Heart Jeweler Talk and Text Line. I would ask you right now, do you have an Alexa at home? Or let's talk about these things. What do you call these, Alexa? Or doesn't Google have one too? Or what are
they? They do indeed. So this is the category of smart home devices, right? It's the Alexas and the Google Homes. Now, I personally am an Amazon shop here, so I have Amazon devices all over my house, literally in every room of my house, even in the bathroom, mm-hmm. In case it's needed. So the big news, of course, in the home this home electronics over the weekend was that Alexa has released an update called Alexa Plus. And you and I have talked a lot about AI, and this is really Amazon's first attempt to really put AI into these Alexa devices.
What is the? Tell me this. I don't have an Alexa. I don't have a smart home device. I don't. You know, I don't want a smart home device. And maybe I'm a curmudgeon in that way. But if I want the TV on, I'll turn it on. If I want the radio on, I'll turn it on. What am I missing out on, Professor?
Yeah, absolutely. They're missing out on a lot of automation and things that make our lives easier, right? So, for example, at the end of the night, I tell my A goodnight. I can't say it out loud because she'll start to hear it. So I'll tell her goodnight. And when I tell her goodnight, it signals for the lights to go off and the TV to go off and for my noisemaker to start for as I try to fall asleep. So we've automated a lot of what we do. Every night at 10 o'clock, for example, I have my smart home checked to make sure all the doors are locked, all the garage doors down. All the lights are off. So we do a lot around security of really using our home and viewing that, being our home very securely. I can stand in my kitchen and look at all the cameras around my house. I can see who's there and who's not there. Mm-hmm. So I can really keep track of what's happening all around me.
Somebody texted in and said, can you ask him how long does somebody like me, not on social media and avoiding apps, will be disconnected from the ability to function in society? Even most government entities are only using socials to communicate, even in emergencies. So I guess the question is, you can run, but you can't hide, right?
Yeah, I think inevitably, I think as this generational change starts to happen, we're going to start to see that more and more is going to become more and more digital. Now, of course, we all know that there are potential limitations and downsides of this as well. But the connectivity is really interesting. It really smooths your life. And the question of a frictionless life, like how can I find those points in my life where I can automate to become more frictionless? To be able to work harder, or maybe to even relax more.
Take me through your day, if you don't mind. Tell me how all of these devices make your life easier, and with an eye toward what people like the texter and myself are missing out on.
Oh, that's a great question. So I'll kind of peel back the onion here. So my day starts at 5 a.m. being woken up by Alexa, mm-hmm. who wakes me up with a greeting. I then walk into the kitchen where my Alexa recognizes me and starts my favorite music. So I brew my wife's coffee and I make some breakfast, and we sit down to a breakfast where we read Reddit together. We talk mm-hmm. about the daily news. Meanwhile, we have two robots. We have Rosie and Moppy. Rosie is our vacuum cleaner. Moppy mm-hmm. is our mop. Mm-hmm. So as we're sitting in the morning, our house is being mopped and our house is being vacuumed without us having to lift a hand. We're able to exit the garage door without having to do anything because our smartphones are hooked to our garage door, so we can just walk out and the garage door goes up. And as we're leaving, all the lights are turned off and our alarm is set. So basically, as we interact through our day, we've introduced technology at all these points to make our lives easier. And when it comes to, you know, picking up fast food for the kids, we use apps for that. We try to use apps or use technology in every way to get rid of the rote part of our lives.
Now, let me tell you what I just heard, Professor. What I heard is, oh, my goodness, this stuff just all came in boxes. I'm going to have to read the instructions on all of this to figure out how to use all of this stuff. It's easier just to do it myself. Am I being what's my issue there? What is wrong? And I'm not an old guy. I don't understand technology a lot.
No, absolutely, and you do. I think a lot of us kind of again look at it as this daunting thing. And so keep in mind, I talked last time about how I lost my dad, and you know, so my mom is 73 at this point, and had to all of a sudden learn how to have a smart home. So from here to Waco, Texas, I'm stepping her through, and I've talked her into, you know, she got her garage door fixed. I got her smart lights and her smart, locks on her doors. And I did all this remotely. So if I'm able to talk a 73-year-old woman into how to do this as my mom, I think we're all capable of doing it. And yes, you may have to do it yourself, but there's also a lot of tools and resources out there that you can help you out, that can help you do these kind of things as well.
Like what, for example? If I want to start living the Andrew Schwartz life, where do I start? Because I'm telling you what's going to happen, and it's happened to me before, where I get the box and I open it and I start to read the directions and I'm thinking, and it's just because of the way my mind works, and I'm not a dumb guy, I don't think, but it's like...
No, you're not at all.
I don't understand any of this. This is confusing me, and I'm starting to get the rivulets of sweat running down my back. I'm just going to put this in a cabinet and go do something else.
Absolutely. So where do you start? I think that's the question you're asking, which is a great way to start, right?
Yeah.
And the first is to kind of sit back and think about a use case. What in your life do you think you'd find the most value in? For me, my first start was the television. Mm-hmm. I hated finding the remote control. Mm-hmm. I couldn't find it. Yeah. So I decided to get an Alexa for a Fire Cube. And all that allowed me to do is sit on my couch and tell it to turn on the
ESPN. Who for the what?
I'm sorry. An Alexa Fire Cube.
Oh,
it controls your television.
All
so
right.
Yeah, I can sit back and I can tell it to turn on the Tigers game. And it can it finds the channel and turns it on for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's as simple as plugging it in, connecting it to your Wi-Fi, and then sitting back and letting it work from that point. So it's pretty easy. Now, if you say, the first start is a use case. Now, what if you say that's kind of daunting and kind of scary? It's not a plug for them specifically, but there's resources like the Geek Squad at Best mm-hmm. Buy. Ask them to come to your house and help you install it and help you to learn it. There's enough opportunities out there. And so that's where I start. And that becomes the building block. So then I became, let's experiment. What happens if I change my locks and my locks are smart? That's an easy one too, because you're just changing out a deadbolt for a smart lock. You're good to go. And now where the technology has evolved a lot over the past year specifically was, you used to have to walk into Best Buy and find the something like Alexa or Google Home, and then you walk up to the lock and you have to make sure that the lock worked with Alexa. Well, the good news for all of us is that over the past year, they've released a new standard. And that standard is called Matter, M-A-T-T-E-R, Matter. That means as long as any device works for Matter, it'll work with any other device. So you don't have to worry about, does it work with Alexa or does it work with Google Home? Everything is going to work with everything at this point. So, for example, as we advance, I have scripts, in essence. So when this light turns on, then close this door or lock this door. So there's a lot of other things you can do. So let me give you an example of what my current project is right now.
Did you say you have scripts?
Yeah, scripts, like technology scripts, like programming scripts that I've written as associated with that. That, of course, is far out.
Yeah.
So what am I working on right now, for example? So we have two cats, right, and four kids. Well, the kids leave the doors open all the time. So I bought a sensor that I'm going to put on the doors. So anytime the doors open to go outside, I'm getting an alert. The door's open. So I can make sure the cats aren't running outside. So we're using technology to do things like that. How can we make our lives better?
You know, if you wouldn't have those cats, you probably wouldn't need those robots to mop and vacuum. I'm just kidding. We'll take a break, pick it up when we come back. We're talking to Andrew Schwartz, professor of IT in the E.J. Uso College of Business at LSU. We're talking about high tech. We'll talk about iPhones and what they're going to do about a new Samsung phone, the ultimate Alexa command guide, and what Alexa Plus can do, and answer your questions at 504-260-1870. I got to tell you, I'm terribly intimidated by all of this stuff. I wish I wasn't, but I am. We'll be back. Tommy Tucker, WWL. 928, I'm sure I'm viewed by as an old fuddy-duddy by Andrew Schwartz, professor of IT and E.J. Uso College of Business at LSU, and I'm not. I'm just... I guess I'm just ignorant when it comes to these kind of things, Professor, because, like I said, my head just doesn't wrap itself around setting the thing up. I'm getting besieged by text here wondering about your privacy and with your house with Alexa and this and that and the other thing about who's listening into what. And do you have any concerns about that or not?
That's a fantastic question. And the good news is, at least personally, and I study privacy a lot, there are apps which are not allowed in my house. For example, TikTok is clearly not allowed in my house because it's a privacy-busting app. Mm-hmm. So I'm very aware of it, and I'm always conscious of what I do around it. So, for example, while I have Alexa in every room of the house, and it's not anywhere public-facing, so you couldn't come by my house and scream, "Hey, Alexa," and all of a sudden control my house. So I'm very aware of that. And then I created my privacy agreements with Alexa such that I don't send data back to them for their continued enhancement. I keep my data local. I keep my data private. And I try to only work with companies that I know take privacy the most serious that they can in this particular instance. So I like to work a lot more with companies like Amazon or Apple than, say, like a Facebook or X or something like that.
Have you read through any end user agreement ever in your life?
That's a great question. And it's a subject of debate. No, I have not. And I think most people have not. And now I have dug into them from a research perspective to kind of look at what's in there. But from a personal perspective, that's not something that I personally do a lot of. And I know your listeners are screaming at the radio right now. How can he use a professor of IT? And while there are definitely some downsides to it as well, keep in mind that I use a lot of this as experiments because I need to be able to learn and talk about it in forums such as this.
So somebody wants to know, are you not concerned with all of that stuff breaking or malfunctioning? And then if it does, what do you do then?
Yeah, absolutely. So I tend to design technology with the expectation that it's going to break. And that's kind of an interesting concept, right? I remember about 10 or 15 years ago, Dell published on their website, they would actually begin to tell you how long you would expect your computer to last. Before it broke down. And electronic waste is a huge problem that we have. So I actually design things with the expectation that about a year or two later that it's likely it's going to need an upgrade or it'll break. So, for example, I have a 5-year-old Apple Watch that's on its last legs right now. So I tend to think about it from that perspective.
Yeah, Professor, you know, as you say this, I'm thinking I was moving a TV over the weekend. And, you know, back in the day, the TV, the cord was hardwired into the TV. And now the power cord, for whatever reason, is not, and it broke, and I had to order a new power cord. I'm thinking to myself, you know, back in the day, you know.
Absolutely. Well, back in the day, things have evolved. Of course, you know, the TVs are thinner, smaller, can do more. And it's interesting. We talk about consumer electronics and television. You can think about streaming, for example, right? And it's funny how we all, you know, canceled our cable and went to streaming services. And at the first, it was really, really reasonable, right? We're spending $5 or $6 a month for all this access. And look at how, over time, my last Hulu bill was $120. I'm back to cable prices again.
Exactly. That's right. You know, because the old-timers say all they could do is put it in your house and raise the prices. And what they do is they put it in your house and they raise the prices. One other thing, too, you know, I test drove a car over the weekend, and I drive a car that's like 10 years old. And it seems to me the best place in the world to put the keys was in the column, and you couldn't lose them now. And again, I'm not trying to sound like an old-timer or anything, but why would you have it where you can lose the keys inside of the car? I don't understand that. What am I missing?
Well, I hate to scare you, Tommy, and because of your smartphone perspective here, but 18 more car companies over the weekend signed up with Apple, so it's going to be that the concept of a key is going to go away. We're going to actually start to see that your phone is going to be your key.
Really? So what if I don't want to have a phone? Well, I mean, that's...
Yeah. There's, of course, going to be fallbacks, and the keys will never go away. But the predominant and organizing philosophy is going to be an app-centric kind of approach to controlling your car. And if you look at the Teslas, that's how they've been designed. So the legacy of the Tesla is going to be really the technology-centric concept of a car. Because really, is a car a hardware company or a software company? And what Elon is actually arguing is that there really is a software company, that once the infrastructure is there, that he can put it in whatever software he needs to control that car.
Because you will agree, Professor, that, you know, the best place, you can't lose the keys. It's right there in the column. There they are, right there. But instead, you lose the keys in the car because you press it with a button. I don't understand. Anyway, let's talk about the new Alexa Plus that's coming out. What are we going to be able to do with Alexa Plus that you couldn't do with the old Alexa? Or do you upgrade the Alexa you have? Or is it like a wife? Do you trade her in on a younger, prettier model? I'm just kidding.
So the good news is that Alexa Plus works with all of our current devices, and all you have to do is opt in. So if you go to your Amazon account, or if you have an Alexa with a screen on it, it'll provide you the opportunity, and you just opt in. And it's going to step you through a wizard that's going to talk to you about its new features. But really, what to me is the most exciting feature is, I don't know about you, but, and I know you don't use you don't have an Alexa, but with Alexa in the past, you were limited. You could only really maybe ask one thing, or if you've ever tried to like ask Alexa something, some information, it was hit or miss. Well, on the back end now, Alexa is now powered by AI. So it's now a conversation. So you don't have to ask Alexa every time you want to ask something. So this morning, my wife and I were talking about a movie we had watched last night and an actor, and we couldn't figure out who he was. So we asked who was on the movie, and Alexa stayed active, and we followed up with questions, and it was a conversation with the Alexa. And so they really improved that interface, how we interact with our technology.
Did she have any of your breakfast?
I don't think she would mind. It would look like eggs or bacon. That's the good part, is they're cheap. They don't require food.
Mm-hmm. Tell me what's going on with phones, because to me that's a misnomer to call them phones, because the last thing in the world it is a phone. I can't remember the last time I spoke on my phone.
Absolutely, and the concept of a phone is really interesting. If you want to kind of start to feel old, you realize how old the iPhone now is. It's 17 years old at this point, and it's part of our life, right? We think it's part of us, but over the next, as we approach the 20-year anniversary of the iPhone, we're going to really start to see the concept of a phone and wearables really be really front and center. So you're going to start to, so the newest version of the operating system for the iPhone, we're going to be introduced to a new concept, which are glass see-through icons. So the icons are going to be seeable. You'll be able to see through them. And you may start to say, well, you know, why? Like, what's going on? The original designer of the iPhone...
Hang on a second. Let me slow you down. What do you mean see through them?
Meaning, if you have your home screen, or you have a picture, I'm sure, of your wife or your kids,
go ahead.
You'll be able to see through that app and see that wallpaper rather than the Facebook icon. So you'll be able to see it, but you'll still be more liquid. And really what's going to be interesting is the original designer of the iPhone was a gentleman named Johnny Ive, and he was recently hired by ChatGPT. So he's going to create the first AI-powered smartphone. And his initial design, which is circulating right now, is actually a clear phone. So there's actually not a it'll all be transparent. So you'll be able to hold it up to the world around you and see through it.
I have a hard enough time keeping track of the one I have. I thought I lost it yesterday. I can't imagine not being able to see it. What the hell are you talking about? The Dickens, you say. Thank you for letting me get all my high-tech jokes in, Professor. I don't get a chance to use them often, and I appreciate it. I really do. Thank you. When it comes to the tablet, I always said that, and I told my kid this, that, you know, you can take that tablet, and what they're going to do is they're going to put a come up with a keyboard that you can attach to it, and they're going to wind up with the same laptop that you had when you started, and it seems as though it did come to fruition. Now I'm looking at this trifold Samsung phone that basically is going to wind up being a desktop computer. Take me through this.
Absolutely. So as I said, there's a real movement toward wearables, right? And so this is just a trend that we're seeing and making our phones think and operate a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. So the idea is rather than you have a screen like we have right now, remember our old flip phones, Tommy? I'm sure you had one of those, right?
Sure.
We're going to kind of go back to that, but instead of being the keys, there is actually going to be a screen. And the breakthrough technology now that Samsung is going to show us this week is that when you unfold the phone, there's no seam. It's going to look like a solid screen, and you're not going to be able to tell that you just folded it up.
How big is
this? It's going to be the size of your iPhone.
But fold three, but it's going to be thicker then, right? If I got to fold it three times?
Right, that's what remains to be seen. They're promising us going to be thinner, but we're all waiting to see. So we'll see this week what this looks like, but it's going to be interesting. And really, the iPhone has been pressured for years to come up to the same perspective, right? And they've been trying internally for years to come up with a foldable phone as well as a foldable iPad. And it's interesting that you brought up the concept of a laptop replacement because I carried a laptop until about 3 months ago, and I got rid of it. I now only carry an iPad. I can do everything that I need to on an iPad. I don't need to carry on a big, bulky laptop anymore.
So what about compatibility? Because one problem I have is I'm a Mac guy, okay? I love Mac computers, and then so I have an iPhone, and I would maybe be tempted to get a Samsung or something else, but I don't know if that's more PC compatible. And again, you know me, back to getting it and getting out of the box, going through the instructions for 30 seconds and just putting it in a cabinet and walking away like I never want to look at that again. How difficult is it, or how compatible are these things all together, or do they mix and mingle or not, Professor?
They absolutely can mix and mingle. So in my household, you know, I have an iPhone, and then my kids have Macs, we have iPhones and iPads, and I have a PC. Mm-hmm. So we have about every operating system possible. Oh, we have a couple Androids in there too. Mm-hmm. But the way that you ensure interoperability is that you look at things through the perspective of an app. So as long as that app has an app on another operating system, the data itself stays in that app. So for example, I use Google Docs pretty extensively. So it doesn't matter if Google Docs is accessed on a laptop or an iPad or a phone, the data is still there. And so if you start to approach your mentality in that way, it starts to change how you think about where your data is located and what your data is.
Let me take a break here while my eyes deglaze, because look, we're not going back, are we, Professor? We're not.
Unfortunately, we are not. No. The Luddite perspective, unfortunately, is not going to pull us backwards.
So at what age would you say, for people that are listening right now and are just kicking, you know, it's like you know, remember the movie Jaws 50 years ago came out?
Absolutely.
And they were kicking the shark off the boat, that kind of thing. For people that are trying to kick technology off of the boat like that, at what age would you say you better stop kicking and you better start embracing?
At any point. I don't think there's an age too old to do this. There's certainly some younger ages with our kids that there's definitely some things to be concerned with. But speaking as 18 plus at that point, I think at any point where you jump in, you just start easy and you just start to kind of get some experience with it.
I want to talk about wearables too when we come back. We're talking to Andrew, fascinating conversation. Andrew Schwartz, professor of IT in the EJUS USO College of Business at LSU. He's been researching technology-related issues for over 30 years. I do find it interesting that you are honest enough to admit you've never read an end-user agreement, and I've yet to find anybody that has. And even if you had, would you have understood it anyway? Probably not. 940, 20 till 10, traffic now, WWL. 9:45, quarter till 10, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Professor Andrew Schwartz. And for those of you texting in, it is pronounced USO. The professor of IT in the E.J. USO College of Business at LSU, been researching technology-related issues for over 20 years. Professor, look, I take a very honest approach. And I could sit here and try to fake the funk and talk about my Alexa this and my that and my the other thing. But I'm being honest. I hate all of this stuff because it confuses me because my mind doesn't work that way. Look, when it comes to logic and legal matters and things like that, man, I'm your guy. I can think in a linear manner. I can do this. I can make arguments. I can debate. But when it comes to this stuff, I'm no good at it at all. And I think as a result, I get intimidated. So how do you keep from getting intimidated? And again, you said play with it, but when it's hard to say play with it when, you know, like I'm trying to do this app for a headshot for something and it just some woman's face pops up in the middle of it. I don't know why that happened, but so I just walked away from it. I mean, how? Because sometimes you can invite viruses in and crash whatever you got, right?
Absolutely, and that's why it specifically. And we're talking before about things like Google Docs. Getting yourself protected from a cybersecurity perspective is definitely important, and not downloading apps or clicking on emails, of course, that we know we shouldn't be a part of. Right. So cybersecurity training is important, of course, important for all of us. But I think a lot of it is just finding that use case that says, you know what, this is something that I kind of feel passionately about that I want to try. So, for example, you brought up the issue of, using an app to take a picture. Well, there's a great success story that's happening right now with our federal government, which I can't believe I'm saying that, with technology. They've actually redone the passport renewal process. You can do the entire thing online. So you don't have to go to the post office and mail your passport back in. The entire thing is online right now.
Really? I got to get mine renewed. I didn't know that.
And the processing time is less than the 6 weeks that they said. And a recent survey found that 94% of people who tried the service absolutely loved it.
Hang on one second. Tim, get my accountant on the line, see how much time I have until the audit so I know when I have to get the passport renewed. Just kidding.
Absolutely.
Professor, let me ask you this about Internet security, because I'm getting a lot of text about this and that. There have been so many breaches here, there, the other thing. How do you know? Yeah, and again, we talk about components being made in China and so forth, and we're going to get to wearables in a minute because I do want to address that. But how do you know that you're not being spied on constantly, you and what's going on in your house, and somebody's not listening somewhere? Or do you care?
Absolutely, and I think that's a question that you have to come to terms with, right, is what are the parameters? What would I be willing to give up if something were to happen? So, for example, the line that I draw is, despite the fact that I have an Alexa in my house, I don't have one with a camera in my bedroom. I don't have one in a public place where they could see my kids. Where even if someone were to hack in, what would you see? You would see the outside of my house, which you can already see. So I'm always very cognizant and thinking through, what are the ramifications? What risk am I really taking? And I think that's the question you have to ask, is the question of risk. So, for example, you brought up the issue of, you know, we think about breaching from a financial perspective, and we all worry about our credit cards. But if you were to, instead of using your credit card, if you actually used Apple Pay, you would actually be more secure financially from breaches than you are if you just use your credit card or even if you just use cash.
Somebody texted and have been trying to cancel DuckDuckGo for 3 months now and don't know how to do it. There's no contact us. Do you know anything about that? Is there any way to call them or anything? Because it's a lot of these companies, they don't have contact us where you can't call and talk to a person, right?
Absolutely. So the methods I typically use if I encounter that is, of course, I follow their typical tech support approach. But the other approach that I've used a lot is to go to LinkedIn and connect with someone inside that organization and then try to and explain the problem that you're having. And a lot of times I found receptivity to that that way as opposed to the direct channels as well. So just a suggestion of something to try out.
Let's talk about wearables. Where are we going with this? Because there was a guy, I was at a restaurant, I'm not going to mention the place, but I could swear he was wearing Meta glasses because it didn't look right. You know what I'm saying? And it just, tell me about how Meta glasses, what kind of wearables people can wear, what kind of way they can be spying on you, this, that, the other thing. Where does the future go with this?
Absolutely. So I have a pair of Meta glasses as well. If your listeners are interested, so these are glasses. They're, you can get them either in sunglasses or you can get them in prescription glasses as well. So I think Target is the biggest provider of that right now. If you go to Target Optical, you can purchase them there. And you can even, if you have insurance, you can even get them with the lenses as well. They're around $300. The way that they work is they connect with it via Bluetooth to your phone.
Right.
And then when you're going around, you can talk to it just like you would talk to your phone. So, for example, with mine, I say, hey, Meta, and all of a sudden the glasses come on.
Yeah.
What can I do with that? Well, I can stream music. So I can. It's open air. I can listen to music as if my AirPods are in, but no one else can hear them. Uh-huh. So I can stream music.
Okay.
But the thing that I'm most excited about now that I'm using it for is translation. So in December, I was in Thailand, and I was wearing my glasses, and I went into an elevator. And in front of me, the entire menu for the elevator was in Thai. So I said, hey, Meta, translate this for me. And through my glasses, I was looking at the Thai language, and in my ear, I heard the translation of everything that was in front of me. Then we were walking around, again, connected to my phone. We passed a statue, and I said, hey, Meta, what's the statue? Meta actually went in and identified it just for me looking at that statue and told me the history of that statue.
So it would be like the Seinfeld episode. You would understand what they were saying about you in Korean without having to bring George's father in, right?
Absolutely. And what's exciting is that I was having a conversation this weekend with a colleague, and we think we may get to a point where the barriers of countries and language may start to break down because some of the new operating systems, the new AirPods, some of the betas on the AirPods, and the AirPods, of course, the headphones that we all wear, actually have the ability to translate in real time. So you'll have someone talking to you in Korean or Thai, but in your ears, if you're wearing your AirPod, what you'll hear is whatever language you want. So we could hit a point where we could communicate with each other and understand each other. And I think that's fascinating and very, very exciting.
Somebody texted in, and this is an excellent question to wrap up on, about iPhones and things for visually impaired people and advances as it relates to that instead of swiping. Because I would imagine if you're visually impaired, all of that doesn't help you out a whole lot, right?
Absolutely. So I'm working with a company right now looking at specifically visually impaired. And what they're working on is replacing the standard cane with a new cane that has AI and cameras in it. So, for example, you walk into a room and it actually visually maps out the room for you using AI and then can help you to navigate around that room and describe what you would be seeing. So there's a lot of work around that kind of concept of how do we bridge those gaps for the visually impaired and the auditory impaired as well.
There's
a lot of exciting developments
there. Is there any work being done, or is there any way AI could eventually restore some type of vision to those that don't have it?
That's a great question. I believe that I've heard rumblings of this, yes. I haven't seen anything in front of me, but I believe that there is a lot of work being done around some of those issues as well. Yes,
see, 100%. When it comes to that, I'm all for high tech, so long as I don't have to fool with it.
Absolutely. And that's, again, why I'm always so optimistic and excited. And are there downsides? 100%. Are you worried about privacy? Yes. But if we embrace this, it really is amazing what it can do for us. So, for example, I took my kids to Jamaica last week on family vacation.
Mm-hmm.
I managed to navigate the entire vacation from checking in the airport to checking in the hotel to going through global entry. I did the entire vacation on my phone. And that's pretty amazing that I didn't need, the old AAA triptychs, and I didn't need the whole, paper confirmations that we
You
used to
are
have.
Not old enough to remember a AAA triptych, and don't say
I
you
am
are.
Indeed.
Are you really?
I am indeed. I grew up in Florida, and my parents grew up in Pennsylvania, so we did the road trip from Pennsylvania to Florida every year.
Wow.
And I was the navigator with the triptych.
I hadn't
so
thought about
I'm
that.
Now I'm the navigator with the Google Maps.
In a long, long time. Hey, thank you, Professor. Pleasure as always. Professor Andrew Schwartz, professor of IT and EJ Uso College of Business at LSU. We're going to check in with him occasionally just to keep track on high-tech stuff. Speaking of which, we'll find out what Newell's got planned for us when we come back on WWL.